This is the Rich Eisen Show.
The world's biggest stars are here.
Timothy Oliphant back here on the show. How are you doing?
By the way, yes. Oliphant.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
And by the way, just drop the Timothy. Just go with Tim. And maybe it makes it easier.
Tim.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Oliphant.
We're not that close. Go back to Timothy.
Earlier on the show, Pro Football Hall of Famer Marshall Faulk. Coming up, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. Golf Channel analyst, Brandel Chambly. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
What a great chat we just had with Marshall Faulk in hour number one about the running back market, what's happened, why it's happening, what can be done about it. If you missed it, there's our podcast. There's also the re-air of this show when we're all done here on the Roku channel. Our podcast is where all podcasts can be acquired, and there's 844-204-RICH, number to dial. If you're on hold, stay on hold. I want to have this conversation, though, with somebody who is clearly in the know. He is Sports Illustrated's writer of the MMQB, one of the best information individuals in our business, and longtime friend of the program, Albert Breer, back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you doing, Albert?
Hey, Rich, what's happening?
I am great, and everything's great, and I'm glad that you are here. Normally, I don't box you in like this, Albert.
Yep.
But you may not answer this question with "because they can," okay? That is not that is not an acceptable answer, even though it might be the ultimate answer. But why didn't Saquon Barkley get a long-term deal from the Giants on Monday? Why not?
Because I think both sides were more entrenched in their positions than I figured they would be. And it looks like a workable divide, right? And, earlier in the offseason, I think Mike Florio reported this, and this was, I believe, right before the deadline to tag guys back in March, that the Giants, who were working on the Daniel Jones deal at the time, were at $13 million. Saquon was at $16 million. Now, the guaranteed money is obviously a part of that. You know, then the deadline passes, the Giants pull the offer. You know, that may or may not have had a material effect on the tenor of negotiations. The reason I thought it was going to get done, Rich, honestly, there was, I think, ample motivation on both sides. I mean, look, Saquon's even further into his career than a lot of these other guys are. He's played for 5 years now. He's had an extensive injury history. And if he's going to bet on himself, you know, this year, then, you know, it's going to be a bet that there's going to be a pot of gold for him there in March of 2024, which, you know, is going to be his seventh year in the league, which is really old for a running back. So, you know, I felt like the motivation at the end would be to take every dime you can and call it a day, because it is a shaky proposition going forward without a deal now if you're him. And then for the Giants, I just think he meant so much to Joe Shane and Brian Daboll in building their program, you know, over the last year and turning the Giants around and turning Daniel Jones around. And God, what a great message that would send to the locker room, and getting a guy who has meant so much to what you've done to build the place up rewarded, that I thought that they'd be motivated to do it. Even if, you know, from a principal standpoint, they may be, you know, and look, this is where they come from. They come from Buffalo, right? Like they may be more attuned to investing deeper at premium positions than they would be at a position like running back. But ultimately, in the end, I think, you know, I probably am guilty of this, because I woke up Monday morning thinking they were going to get something done. They were a little bit more entrenched in their positions than we would have thought.
Well, how far apart are they? I mean, if it is just $16 million opposed to $13 million, so it's $3 million here, then $3 million there, and $3 million there. Is it really just the cost of maybe his one year of his tender over the life of the contract? Like, and how does that fall apart like that? Or is it not that simple?
And you know, my suspicion is, Rich, knowing what I know about this, that it may have come down to how much money was guaranteed in the third year. That'd be my guess anyway. I made this argument in the column this morning that, you know, like, let's just say the Giants only wanted to guarantee 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's say the Giants like guaranteed $28 million over the next 2 years, okay? And then the third year is a de facto team option. Even in that case, Saquon would be walking away from $18 million that he's not going to get as part of the franchise tag. So now he has to make that $18 million up next year, again, when he'll be going into year seven. And is he going to be able to make that $18 million up? I think the Giants maybe figured, you know, eventually he would take that, and it'd be difficult for them to guarantee money in the year eight with Saquon, which again is a very long, very down the line for a running back. And, you know, I think Saquon's probably, you know, his position was probably feeling like I gotta, you know, protect myself from an injury standpoint where we are and where I am in my career. And, I need at least a part of the third year guaranteed. So that'd be my guess, you know, but you know, there were a lot of moving parts in this negotiation for sure.
So what happens now with him and I'll cut him. Let me pause. What happened with Josh Jacobs? My colleague Tom Pelissero said that he was sitting in a car outside the facility with Max Crosby, thinking this was going to get done, so he could go right to work, and that didn't happen. Or is that?
Yeah, I mean, my sense is that the effort was really made. You know, they made a very strong effort. And, you know, I know the Raiders have tried to be as communicative as possible with Jacobs. And, I just think that's another one where, you know, my sense would be that the guarantees in the third year are part of the problem. You know, the average per year, I think you can kind of work through that stuff. But guaranteeing players money into a third year, especially at that position, especially where, you know, in the case of Saquon, you'd be talking about his eighth year in the league. The case of Josh, you'd be talking about his seventh year in the league. I don't think that one got like contentious in the room, you know, between the Raiders and Josh Jacobs people. But obviously, like, you know, I think you had like Tom said, you know, I didn't have the detail on him being in the car, but I know he was at the facility yesterday. I think Josh Jacobs was motivated to get something done. You know, and this is another one. I do think like one of the similarities here, and these are not the same, you know, but one of the similarities here is that, like, just like, you know, Saquon meant a lot for Brian Daboll and Joe Shane in year one in New York, Josh Jacobs obviously meant a lot and shouldered a heavy load in year one for Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler in Vegas. And so, you know, it's interesting because I just think like a lot of us do focus on the average per year, and I understand it's an easy number to go off of, but guarantees are always important. And I think at this position in particular, you know, going to that third year for a running back can be a tough pill to swallow for a team. Whereas for a player, he obviously wants to protect against the chance that there's a downturn, which makes him motivated to really push on that third year.
I don't get it. I honestly don't. I mean, you're sitting here saying third year. And I know you point out, you know, Joe Shane's from Buffalo where they didn't pay guys. And then, you know, McDaniels is from New England where, you know, they won a Super Bowl with Sony Michel, LeGarrette Blount, Jonas Gray, Antoine Smith, so on and so forth. But hold on a second. I'm not done with it. Their current quarterback, you know, Josh Allen's not walking through that door in New Jersey, and Tom Brady, you know, I think I'm confident in saying he's not walking through that door in Las Vegas.
I guess you never say never.
You know, but not as a player, he's not walking through that door, right? But so that's the point. I mean, we just had Marshall Faulk who called in. In hour one, and saying this is all because of the way that they pay quarterbacks and push up guys like Daniel Jones and Jimmy Garoppolo, I am lumping together because they're not in the Burrow and the Mahomes and Allen class, Rodgers class. They're not in them in terms of decoration and widely held belief amongst folks like us to have that same success. So, you know, where. How in the world is Saquon not as valuable, like, for a third year to make happy in year one and two, you know, as you're trying to win now? I don't get. I don't understand it. I don't.
Yeah, I would say, there are a couple things. Like, number one, I think it's how, like, teams view this position as replaceable. And it's really, really hard to replace a quarterback, right? It's really hard to replace a top corner. It's really hard to replace a number one receiver. It's hard to replace a top left tackle. You know, like, I mean, look at the two teams in the Super Bowl, right? The Chiefs had a seventh round rookie in Isaiah Pacheco at running back. The Eagles had a guy in Miles Sanders who was on a rookie contract who they let walk, even though he only got $6 million a year from another team. So those are the two teams that were in the Super Bowl. I also think the franchise tag, you know, hurts these guys because it's such an affordable thing for these teams, so they have that to fall back on. You know, and it's like, okay, well, if we don't want to give this guy guarantees into the third year when we think he might be done, well, you know, he's going to show up anyway in week one. And it's cold, it's callous, but it's probably true, you know? I mean, that these guys are going to show up. And then I think the third thing is, you know, teams, you know, how I hate to use the cliche that it's a copycat league, but, you know, like, I mean, with what the Rams did, you know, like, there's this focus on premium positions. And if you look at, like, the Rams, right, for example, like, because they've been sort of a model now, you know, there was a point there where, you know, Sean McVay and Les Snead, those guys, moved away from paying running backs like Todd Gurley and off-ball linebackers like Alec Ogletree, and they went all in on premium positions. They paid Aaron Donald, they paid Cooper Kupp, they paid Jalen Ramsey, they paid Andrew Whitworth, they paid Matthew Stafford, right? And so, like, I think if you look at it, and this is an amazing thing, you know, and I had this on Twitter earlier today. If you look at it, there are 56 players across the NFL that are paid $20 million a year or more. 17 of them are quarterbacks. 13 of them are wide receivers. 9 of them are interior D linemen. 7 of them are edge rushers. 5 of them are offensive tackles. So 51 of the 56 play 5 positions, you know? So it's just sort of where the league's going. You know, that's the other part of it. So, and look, like, I would argue, I think the argument against that is sound too, which the argument against that is, well, you know, like, these guys are, mean a lot to their teams and their offenses are built around them, which makes them different. And if you look at guys the teams have paid on the whole, they haven't regretted those contracts. So guys who are truly, you know, the kind of guy you build your offense around, you know, the Titans don't regret paying Derrick Henry. The Browns don't regret paying Nick Chubb. You know, I think even like the Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott, the Vikings and Dalvin Cook, it didn't work out at the end, but I don't think they would say that was money poorly spent based on what those guys meant to those teams.
Right. You know? And the interesting thing is that the team that runs the offense that might make running backs the most fungible is the team that employs the highest paid running back in San Francisco. And the question I have is, if the Niners had somebody at the quarterback position that they were paying like the Rams pay Stafford and like the way that the Chiefs pay Mahomes and so on and so forth, would they sacrifice Christian McCaffrey? Would they treat the running back position like everybody else? And that they don't because they don't have the quarterback that is paid that money and they have that luxury? Do running backs need to seek out teams with quarterbacks on their first year contract for them to get paid? Because, you know, I don't know if it's good for this league that running backs are more valuable in fantasy football than they are in reality football. Albert?
Here's what's fascinating about it, Rich. Like, McCaffrey would have been the cautionary tale until he got traded to the Niners, right? And now all of a sudden, you know, he's the poster boy for paying a running back. So what does that tell you? Because they paid him in Carolina after 3 years, and then he couldn't stay on the field. You know, like, he was great 17 through 19. They pay him in 20. 20 and 21, he couldn't stay on the field. And then 2022, he's dynamite, and he gets traded, and now he goes to San Francisco. And now you see, like, the value of a running back who can give you something in the passing game, too, and who can be kind of that chess piece for you, which I think is a huge part of it, too, is, like, which of these guys can give you something in the passing game. And that's where a guy like a Kamara is so valuable. And even, like, the Barkleys and the Zekes and the Gurleys and the Mixons, like, those guys are, I mean, they're not Kamara, but for bigger backs, they're really good in the passing game, you know? So that's sort of the, I think that's the risk, you know, for teams is like, okay, like, the one thing, like, even if I really love the player and I think that he's a unicorn at that position, you know, the problem that I run into is it could be what happened to Christian McCaffrey, where Christian McCaffrey, I mean, I can remember when he was coming out, Rich, he had, like, I mean, incredibly clean medicals. And then he stayed healthy his first 3 years in the league. And then he signs the contract, and all of a sudden he can't stay healthy for 2 years in a row. Saquon, same thing. I mean, I had a team tell me Saquon, his medical profile coming out of Penn State was similar to a kicker's. Like, that is how clean he was medically. And he gets to the league, and he can't stay on the field, you know? So that's part of it, too. It's just, is a complex thing, and I think we make a mistake sometimes of thinking this is like a straight line thing. There's a lot that goes into it. Obviously, these are tough decisions to make. Now, I would argue like that if you're going to pay Saquon, say, $14 or $15 million a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're basically paying him what the Broncos pay Cortland Sutton, what the Raiders pay Hunter Renfrow.
Exactly.
And I don't think, I mean.
That's what I'm saying is it's apples to apples. And so that's the thing I don't, we had Austin Eckler on the show last week. He's like, I'm making the same as a third wide receiver on the team. It pisses me off. You know,
and it should.
It damn well it should. It should piss off anybody in any line of work. And that's the whole thing I don't understand. You know, and I think receivers are coming out of college right now at an alarming rate. And so are wide receivers next? Could they be the next running back group? Or this is just, well, the tight ends are already becoming the next running back group. But I understand, you know, that that tight ends are valuable, and we see how terrific they are with their university and everything in June. But what's next? Could receivers be next on this hit list?
And I, you know what I think the other thing that, like, here's what I think, like, it's just worth everybody paying attention to this part of it. I think analytics are a huge part of this. Like, so many teams have built out analytics departments now.
Right.
And so it's not like guessing anymore. You know what I mean? Like in a lot of cases, like, I know it's been going on in baseball forever. Right. But like, it's we're not guessing. We're putting a value on your head. You know what I mean? Like, this is what we think you're worth, or this is the probability that you're going to, you know, that contract's going to wind up looking like a good one for us, you know? And this is like across the board. Like, this is happening. I mean, I think we're going to, like, the impact of analytics in the NFL, even though you can't see it because teams are very secretive about this stuff, I think is profound in a lot of different ways. And this is one of them, where positional value, I would say, has almost been overemphasized over the last few years because owners are empowering analytics people, and the analytics people have data that backs up these sorts of decisions. And so, I know I sound like I'm all over the map, but it truly is something that, like, there's just so many different ways to take this, you know? I mean, I can remember, I think this was 2016, 17, whatever. And I was at the Saints, and I was with one of their guys on the sidelines at one of their practices, and we're just catching up and everything else.
Yep.
And he goes to me, he says, like, well, look at Michael Thomas out there. And he's like, you know, Mike's a great player for us. He's like, do you realize Mike touches the ball less than half as much as Mark Ingram does? Like, on what planet does it make sense that he's making, you know, four times as much as he is? And I thought about that. And he's like, that probably should count for something too. You know what I mean? Like, so it's just an interesting argument that has so many different tentacles to it, which I think is why it's so interesting for all of us to talk about it whenever one of these situations arises.
And that's why it's kind of a false equivalency of saying, well, name me the last Super Bowl winner that had a highly paid running back or a league's leading rusher on it. And the reason why they don't is because most of the quarterbacks that have won the Super Bowl are named Brady and Mahomes the last few years. And that's, so it's not like, it's not fair.
Offenses are built around those guys.
Right.
Yeah, you don't need as much.
Right. That's why you're able. That's why if you have Mahomes, then you can win a Super Bowl with Isaiah Pacheco and Damian Williams being your leading rusher. You have that luxury. And Kelsey, on top of it. You know what I'm saying? So it's not.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, it's not all Mahomes. You've got a Hall of Fame talent there. And, you know, in terms of New England, another Hall of Fame talent wearing a headset. So I get it.
I gave you the Chiefs and Eagles, right? Like what they did at running back and how they didn't invest a lot.
Right.
Another counter argument to that could be look at the teams that they played in the conference championship games. Both those teams, the Niners and Bengals, had highly paid running backs, like guys who were paid, you know, top five salaries in the league at the position,
right?
And Joe Mixon and Christian McCaffrey. So it's not like you can't get there. I mean, I don't think you or I would have been shocked if the Bengals and Niners had beaten the Chiefs and Eagles on that Sunday. And then we'd be talking about something else entirely. That argument that I made earlier would be dead, right? So I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's, you know, it's so complicated, and it's just, and I think, you know, I think if you're gonna like really, if you're really gonna bottom line it, like I think what NFL teams would tell you is, we're not on these contracts, we're not paying for past performance. We're paying for what we project them to be into the future.
And I would unless say, it's like, a quarterback, unless it's a,
that's probably the biggest thing.
Unless it's a quarterback, Albert. Unless it's a quarterback. You know, like
but
that.
They get paid for the for how they're because those guys can play deep into their 30s.
I guess
you are
yeah.
paying for future performance there. You know.
Okay. So last one for you. How does this affect Dalvin Cook, who is definitely, I would think, the most sought after running back that's sitting out there? With all due respect to yeah. Kareem Hunt, and by the way, there Kareem Hunt and Zeke are sitting at home, and those are, by the way, two. Of the last, let me hold on a second. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Two of the last five leading rushers in the NFL are sitting at home.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
With Dalvin Cook out there also. Like, what does Dalvin Cook's sure. market look like? When does it pop? And give me an estimation on what that number he's going to sign for starts with, Albert.
Okay. Well, I my guess would be, I don't know, we'd probably be talking somewhere in the neighborhood of like what Miles Sanders and David Montgomery got at the top of the running back market free agency, which was six, maybe a little more than that. I guess you'd pack in some incentives that would, you know, help him get closer to being whole to what he was supposed to make on his Vikings contract. As for like who is interested, you know, I think that the AFC East is the place to look. The Dolphins, you know, part of this for them is, and they were almost, I mean, I'm talking about the deal, the trade was on the doorstep of getting done in March. Mm-hmm. The Dolphins got cold feet at the end, but there was almost a trade that would have sent Dalvin Cook to Miami back in March. Now, one of the things the Dolphins saw in him was adding an element of speed and explosiveness, like a big play threat mm-hmm. To their backfield back then. They drafted Devin Achane in the second round out of Texas A&M. So, like, how he does early in camp could affect and how he did in the spring could affect how the Dolphins approach Cook. The Jets, I would absolutely watch the Jets. Mm. I think one of the ways that they see Dalvin Cook internally is somebody who could allow them to be more judicious in bringing Breece Hall back, who obviously they think a lot of. They can be a little bit, I would say, a little bit more on the cautious side with Hall. If they have, you know, a guy that they feel like can kind of hold the rope while Hall is getting himself back to 100%. You know, and then the Patriots had that money earmarked for DeAndre Hopkins that they could turn around and go and offer to Dalvin Cook now. So I think New England's looking to add another element to their offense that they don't have right now. And I think Cook could kind of complement Ramondre Stevenson in their backfield pretty nicely. So those would be the teams I would watch. I mean, my guess would be like you're not going to see anything crazy, but monetarily. But it would seem to me like the right number would be right in that range that, you know, the top running backs in the free agent market got back in March.
Albert, you are the man. When do I see you in Los Angeles? You're coming out for Rams, Chargers, Cowboys, doing that whole business.
Yeah, so I'm thinking somewhere. I know this is very very vague, but somewhere in August. The problem right now, like, I'm still waiting for a couple teams, and like this whole putting the camp trip together is like a jigsaw puzzle.
Yep.
Where if one thing goes wrong, the whole thing falls apart, and then you got to build the thing back up. So, but I'm thinking that yeah, second or third week of August, I'll be out there, and I'll definitely swing by El Segundo.
And where in between Mike Shanahan and George Hamilton is your tan currently ranked right now, Albert? What do we got?
I would say I was like I would give myself like a 9 like last Friday when I left the island. Ooh. I'm probably down to like a 7.5 right now.
But Albert, come on now.
By the time you see me though, like I'm going to be back up there. For those who don't know, I would say like my ability to tan might not be number one on my list of abilities. But it's definitely top 5 and not number 5.
Okay, we got to get you more scarlet and not gray. Okay, Albert, let's go. Focus. Get that base right. going. We'll chat.
I promise you this, Rick, I will have my game face on when I'm in studio.
Attaboy. Attaboy. We'll see you soon. Be well, Albert. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Rich.
The great Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's take a break. 844-204-RICH. Number to dial here on this program. So much to unpack over the last hour and 20 minutes of this show. If you're like me and you're on the run, you need help finding good food and eating right. And now that we're in the thick of summer, you might be looking for wholesome, convenient meals to support sunny, active days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit, can help you fuel up fast with flavorful and nutritious ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track reaching your goals. If you're too busy with summer plans to cook but want to make sure you're eating well, well, with Factor, skip the extra trip to the grocery store and the chopping, prepping, and cleaning up too, while still getting the flavor and nutritional quality you need. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy. Then get back outside and soak up the warm weather. This July, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/Eisen50 and use code Eisen50 to get 50% off. That's code Eisen50 at factormeals.com/Eisen50 to get 50% off.
Are you currently enjoying the show on the Stitcher app? Then you need to know Stitcher is going away on August 29th. Yep, going away, as in kaput, gone, dead. Rest in peace, Stitcher, and thanks for 15 years of service to the podcast community. So switch to another podcast app and follow this show there. Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
So I played 11 years.
Yes, you did.
They've been to the Super Bowl 9 times.
Damn.
And I didn't get there once.
Right.
Think about that.
Right.
And I was one pick away from being drafted by the Patriots.
What happened?
The Chargers drafted
me. I know that's what happened. They didn't come up and get you.
So I went on a visit to the Patriots, and that's when Charlie Weiss was the offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And I go to Boston, and I really like to visit. I like Charlie. I love Charlie Weiss.
Did you meet with Bill?
I did meet with Bill. You know, we sat in his office right above the stadium, right there where you're looking out at the stadium. And we really just sat there. We really didn't talk about much. We just looked at each other.
And, what do you mean? We just kind of stared in each other's eyes,
you know, I guess.
So you're saying it was awkward?
No, I mean, I just, you know how Bill is. He just, there's only a few things he probably wants to know about you. And I guess he was trying to get a sense of, you know, was I passionate about football? As most coaches do. You're going to invest a first-round pick on a guy. You want to make sure they're passionate.
Do you think they would have chosen you if you were available?
Well, they said they were going to choose me. Charlie Weiss promised me if I was there at 6, because they needed a running back. They needed a running back bad that year. And so, when the Chargers drafted me, I think they took Richard Seymour.
Pick. Yep.
Well, I mean, worked out there. Have you ever brought up to Brady when you've seen him?
Never brought it up.
You could have been Robin, his Batman.
I always thought about, you know, what would that be like?
With all due respect to Antoine Smith.
Yeah, I know, right?
To Antoine Smith.
I know. It would have been a little different. No way.
Yeah.
I'm kind of getting freaked out.
Oh, yeah. We've had some great running backs on this program, and that was Marshall Faulk in hour one, and that was, of course, LT back in the day at the Super Bowl in Atlanta. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger is the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Marshall Faulk had his 2 cents. Albert Breer just had his. Now we go to 844-204-RICH. For your 2 cents, our great friend Terzo in Iowa, back here on the Rich Eisen Show. All rise. Terzo, what's on your mind, sir?
How are you guys today?
We're good. We're chopping it up. What's going on?
Good. Hey, Rich, so this is kind of, I got a couple things for you, but my first thought with this running back issue, I think a lot of it has to be tied to the GMs. And the reason I kind of say that is I think that they're so nervous at this point to give away that big deal to one of these running backs. I think that's going to cost them their job. And I know some of that analytics kind of pushes everybody into that position. I just kind of have this sense that none of them really want to pull the trigger and keep any of these guys.
No, and I understand what you're saying, Terzo, but I mean, Saquon just let's just use him as an example. If Joe Shane gave Saquon a third year that Saquon wanted, and then he gets hurt by like year two, and John Mara calls Joe Shane into his office and say, why the hell did you make the guy who we adore here so happy that we're now left with an injured player at a position that we could have just, you know, franchise tagged him and left him unhappy? You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't seem like it's going to cost him his job if he goes ahead and says to, you know, John Mara, we signed him to this deal. We want him happy, right? You know, sir? You know, like, we also, you know, we also know what he means to the franchise, right? And now, you know, Daboll can coach can go into the locker room and look at everyone in the face and say, you ball out and you get paid around these parts. So let's go beat the crap out of the Cowboys and the Eagles and let's go get them. You think John Mara's going to that's why I understand what the analytics say and what, you know, what the position might be borne out to pay. But Saquon just strikes me as just a different cat for that team in that area and what he means, you know?
And Rich, I completely agree with you. And I want Fred Warner to come back and get a great contract. And those middle linebackers are kind of in that same position. And I would hope that the Niners make sure that they bring him back and give him everything that he wants, because he's that heart and soul. And Saquon's that same guy. It just boggles my mind.
Well, and thanks to the call, Terzo, and the reason why the Niners should be able to do that is because their starting quarterback is on either his first contract, Lance Purdy, or Sam Darnold, who is on his third team, and I'm sure is being paid a salary for a song. And you can pay Nick Bosa, which is apparently coming, and Fred Warner, and the rest of this team, and McCaffrey at 16 mil, and you can have that piece of, you know, China in your case because of the way the team is constructed. And you, if you can go to the NFC Championship game with Jimmy G multiple times and Brock Purdy once, thanks to Jimmy G, right? And the way the team is constructed, and the owner is sitting back there going, hell yeah, I love my coach and my general manager, even though we just traded a whole bunch of draft choices and draft capital to go get a kid that's hardly playing. Then it works out. But that's a rarity. That is for damn sure. Matt in Tennessee, you're here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Rich.
Hey.
Hey, Susie, too. I know she's listening.
Hey, listen, that's my wife, Matt.
Hold up, bro. Hold up now. Wow.
Hey, I'll follow back up with that.
That's okay.
No.
That's fine.
No. I got a follow-up question after I get ready of what I'm going to tell you. And I'll hit you in the soft spot real quick.
I think you already have, Matt. I'm not going to lie.
Sorry, I'm going to do it again.
It's all right. Don't worry. All right. Go ahead.
All right. DeAndre Hopkins, when he was at Michigan, all right, he would run, throw, and sometimes on fourth down, he'd punt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone was able to do that successful in the NFL, how would you pay them? You know, like running backs do a lot of stuff, like blocking, catching, you know, special teams.
Yes.
They deserve more. And I think the NFL, the union should really push for that.
And so what's your point about Suze? What's your question about that?
Oh, when you're not there?
Yes.
I call in and I ask embarrassing questions about you.
That's great.
So I want to give you a follow-up, and I'm going to give you some redemption.
Okay.
How long do you guys actually wait to talk to each other when you first wake up?
Thank you for the call, Matt. Greatly appreciate it. We say good morning right away to each other. Of course, after we check our emails. That's number one. By the way, I think he means Desmond Howard.
Hopkins played for Michigan.
No. He said DeAndre Hopkins. Okay. I think he means Desmond Howard.
Okay, that makes
who
sense.
Who did everything. And Charles Woodson then did everything. They won Heismans, by the way.
Thanks for pointing that
out. Oh, no, and Charles won half a national championship, so that's great. So what was his point?
He was hitting on your wife. That was the point.
Did you see on our Instagram account? Because we posted a great story from Timothy Oliphant. From Deadwood, where he talked about there was a kid actor who had somebody on his team not being it was rubbing David Milch the wrong way.
Very funny.
And they wound up killing the kid's character off.
Yep.
See ya. Like, that's a true Hollywood story right there.
Sometimes it can
don't
happen.
Mess with Milch. Okay? Don't have your people mess with Milch because then your character's gone.
That's why I try to stay on your good side.
And that
here.
Was also a great story for Deadwood fans because the child actor's character being killed off was a major plot point.
Right.
And led to one of the most gut-wrenching scenes. And he said Milch came up with that on the fly by just saying the kid's team is driving me nuts. He's out.
He's out.
And he talked about how creative David Milch was, that he just, like, on the spot decided to kill the kid's character off and then create a major plot point for Deadwood. So all of that, and I knew Susie would pay attention because she's a diehard Deadwood fan. Did you see what she posted?
No.
Here she goes, wow, the hair, epic. about Tim.
That was,
and I wrote back,
she's right.
I wrote back, thanks, I just had a cut.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like, how am
night.
I supposed to respond to that? Like, I thought she'd be like, wow, what a great Deadwood story. Oh, wow, whatever. I mean, but she's talking about his hair, which is, by the way, spectacular.
But you know your wife.
I
so
understand that.
I don't know why wife. That comment surprises you.
It doesn't surprise me. It's just...
It hurts him a little.
I don't know. It's just like...
Okay.
Look, Rich.
But I'm very confident in me and us. I mean, I say hello to her right away when we wake up in the morning.
That's good.
Look,
answer
Rich.
Matt's
that's nice.
Question.
Coach Prime can help you get to that
Coach Prime.
Timothy hair stand.
I know that. You comeback know? Player of the year.
I mean,
comeback look, coach
dude,
of the
you
year.
You would win comeback. You understand Rick, that? You that's your trophy.
You can get all the surgeries you want. You're not getting that hair that Tim's got.
That is what we call God given.
Yeah. So
you never. What if he does, Brockman? Though,
look at that.
Ain't nobody getting that hair.
That was on at Rich Eisen show. If you want to chime in,
Milch's quote though. Listen, we're gonna kill the kid.
Yeah, no.
Killing
yeah,
the kid.
We're killing the kid.
Kill
said
the
David
kid.
Milch just knocked on his trailer door. Yeah, and then we're just going to have this whole different plot for the entire season. Your character. But he said, it'll be good for you, though. Your character. It's going to be great.
It was good for him.
By the way. All right, we'll take a break here. The commissioner of the SEC has chimed in on the name, image, and likeness front, and he has put out a request for help that I think will go unheeded and be completely left disappointed
like
by.
Like a bat signal?
Please. That's next. This is the Rich Eisen Show. Brandel Chamblee on the latest from the Open Championship coming up. Back here on our program, 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the show. If you want to get your phone call taken, we are more than happy to talk with you here on the show. I know we've been really all over that running back thing. It's just a fascinating conversation. Obviously, training camps don't open mostly until next week. The Jets open tomorrow. And Hard Knocks will begin. Could you imagine what Hard Knocks would be like if Dalvin Cook shows up?
Oh, man.
For the Jets?
I mean, I'm sure the league and films are crossing their fingers.
Could you imagine what Hard Knocks would be if they were allowed to go into the darkness retreat with your quarterback?
Did you hear, though, speaking of darkness, did you hear that the Jets might put the film's crew in the dark? Did you see Schefter say that Saleh thinks watching players get cut is inhumane and there will not be those moments on Hard Knocks? They will not let NFL films
really?
Into these conversations between coach and player.
Man, Richard Saleh hates fun and good TV and entertainment.
Robert Saleh, too.
Who did I say?
You said Richard Saleh. It's okay. You're mixing two of your favorite people.
Who's the Richard?
Lewis.
Oh,
like, what are we doing? Honestly, it shouldn't be up to him.
It's his team. It's his facility.
If it's not his show.
It kind of is.
But it shouldn't be.
Understood.
Like, what are we doing? Then they shouldn't be on.
But we know how it works.
They
Rich.
They didn't want to be on.
We know how it works. You're gonna follow a guy and you're gonna get all invested in him. He's gonna have a great backstory, and then he's gonna break our hearts.
And then all of a sudden he's
cut.
Not gonna be on episode three.
Yeah, I mean that's just how all these work,
dude. Like if it was Patriots Hard Knocks, what would it be? Just like one big redacted statement from the CIA.
That's funny.
That's what it would be.
It would be awesome.
It would just, you know what I'm saying.
But Bill will sit down and do a whole documentary. It's
we're back here on the Rich Eisen Show talking about what if the Patriots were on Hard Knocks. Our radio audience just returned. It would be like one of those redacted documents that you see in, you know,
just black lines.
You know, national security trials. No, it would be just the screen. You would only, it would be all black except for a few lines that you'd be able to see on your screen, and it would just be a big dark screen.
It'd be like the New England Patriots.
One long, like, yeah, wow. One, just one, a few lines on the top left part of your television screen, you'd be able to see what's in there.
Stupid.
That's the way it would be if the Patriots were on Hard Knocks, and yet the Jets are like saying, we don't think the conversation between coach and player getting caught is a private matter. Like, would you want to have your cameras on if you got fired from your job? Like, you want the cameras on that moment? Lowest moments?
Was Hard Knocks filming? Was that a part of the deal?
Yeah.
So you're also getting exposure by being on the show. This is the point of the show. Everyone loves those
the
moments.
The point of the show is to give
fans
a look at what it's like to be in the NFL in a training camp.
Players don't
what it's
cut.
Like to be a player, what it's like to be a coach.
That's part of training camp.
Brother, that's what it was when back in the day when Brian Billick's like, bring the cameras. Rex Ryan's like, bring him. Now nobody wants him. That's why the league had to come up with some sort of construct, because if I'm not mistaken, half the league has never been on Hard Knocks.
Oh, not that many. Probably more than half the league.
So what's the league going to do? Basically say, we choose who's on Hard Knocks every year. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you made the playoffs, you're coming off a world championship. We're choosing. You're on. You can't. Too bad. Tough noogies, as we said back in camp.
Yep.
All right. Well, I nominate the Patriots for the first one and see how that works.
It would be awesome.
I would love to see Belichick coach in a training camp
because
and what it's like.
Anytime we've seen any footage of Bill in the Football Lives or any of the documentaries he's done, he is incredible. The scene of him and Tom Brady breaking down film where Ed Reed is one of the greatest pieces of football art we've ever seen.
Right, and one of my other famous scenes from that Football Life was watching him try to find something on his radio. Remember that in his car? Like it was, you know what I'm saying? Like even the mundane to see him go through that,
Bill Belichick?
What it's
Come
like
on,
to
what
be,
are we doing?
It would be, again, if Hard Knocks is a service for the fans, that would be the greatest public service, is to show me how Belichick handles his business. Honestly, front row seat. I would be there, popcorn ready.
And the first scene that I want to see is him firing Matt Patricia.
Well, he did that already, didn't he?
I want him to bring Matt back just so we can see him and get the satisfaction of the firing. Because it was the worst hiring in franchise history.
We should reenact that with Frank Caliendo as Belichick and Zach Galifianakis as Patricia. Between two ferns.
Between two Lombardis.
Between two Lombardis. Hey. Look at you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
You are not serious people.
That's a good one. Our new drop finally made. It's air. Well done, Jay. That's
Thanks.
Exactly what I'm looking for that
amazing.
Drop.
That's from
we
Succession?
Are not serious people. Yes.
Okay.
We are not serious people with
you
that.
You want to see Jerry Jones on the Bond villain yacht? Like, come on.
I mean, we've been on a few times. They come to us when they want the ratings to spike. Let's just be honest.
The Cowboys have been on. Yeah, remember a couple years ago, NFL Films did the, they had the drone fly through the star.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was one of the most incredible shots in the history of Hard Knocks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it was boring because the Cowboys are boring.
No, listen to you. Listen to you.
Except Micah Parsons. He's I like him. Tank.
Tank.
You good?
Feller loves Tank.
I love Tank.
Who else is interesting on that team?
You love Dak, even though you try to trash him.
Diggs' kid is more interesting than Diggs, right?
By the way, Aiden Diggs, I don't know what that kid's going to grow up to be, but I'm here for it. He might be a football player. He could be a coach. He could be a public speaker. That kid is amazing.
So,
are you Patrick Mahomes? No, I'm Dak Prescott.
Let me just share with you. I'm very well rested today. I went to Maine over the weekend because are in camp there.
You flew cross country.
I did. And Boston, you know, was inundated with rain and flights got canceled. And Suze was fine. As I was driving back from Maine, with our oldest, who's got a few days off from his camp. Mm-hmm. Sue's got on her phone and found me a flight through Salt Lake. I got in like 1 a.m. But I crashed last night. And what helped put me to sleep was the Yankees offense. And watching that last night was like, what can I do? Like I could like see some paint and watch it dry.
Yep.
Or watch the Yankees offense. With all due respect to Sean Casey, the mayor, it's going to take some time for him without Judge. But still, despite striking out 12 times against a young pitcher I'd never heard of before in five innings, hardly putting the ball in play, they were actually up 3-1. Yep. And, another way that I just didn't want to, wake myself up or get myself all stirred up because so I can get some rest and catch up on my sleep. I couldn't watch a horror movie, but I felt like I was. You watch people go somewhere in a house or they walk through some spot in the woods and you're like, just don't do that. You're sitting there, you just don't do that, right? Yeah. Don't do that. You're gonna get axed. You're gonna get whatever.
Don't go down there. Don't go out there.
Don't do it. So the Yankees are up by 2 runs, and Ohtani strolls to the plate with 2 outs and a man on first, and Michael King, who walked that guy on first a couple batters before, and pitching coach comes out, and I think to myself, they are not going to pitch to Shohei Ohtani, who's already reached base twice. As a matter of fact, he would have knocked in the first run of the game had for some reason the Angels' third base coach sent home, who was way out. I think it was that Neto, the leadoff hitter for the Angels, who's in front of Ohtani.
Exactly.
And he came. He like pratfalled right into the catcher. It was ugly. I felt for him because he took it right in the face. But so Ohtani, he's really good. In case you need to, a backstory on him, he had already reached a base twice. And so the pitching coach strolls back and to the dugout, and the Michael King proceeds to pitch to Ohtani. And mm-hmm. I think, do I reach for Twitter now? Do I go and do the fan thing? But I was writing it out and I hovered. I like to hover. Even though the blue check mark I didn't pay for but got anyway, because I have over 1 million followers, which is not a humble brag or anything. I'm just pointing out about how great a business model they've got going on there at the old Twitter machine. But I don't have to hover because it now actually gives you some time whether you hit send. Mm. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I typed out, what are they doing pitching to him? And Michael King uncorked a fastball that went in the upper part of the zone, and he threw it past Ohtani for a swing and a miss. And I thought, oh my goodness, they're like, can he get out of this? And I thought to myself, you know what? I'm still thinking of sending it anyway, but I'm just going to put it down. Not everything needs to be on Twitter. And then he proceeds to give up a monster 2-run shot to Shohei Ohtani. That, by the way, I saw coming, like the calls from within the house. I saw it. I saw it coming. Somebody, what's his name? Aaron Boone didn't. And Ohtani goes yard. 35th home run of the season, and epically bat flips.
Epic bat flip.
Just absolutely flipped the game on its head. Fan base that was falling asleep like I was totally erupts. Ohtani's screaming and yelling like it's the World Baseball Classic as he rounds third, and Yankees lose in extra innings. Because why would you put Ohtani on? I understand it's putting the tying run on base. You don't do that. Certainly when you got a pitch to Mickey Mosiak.
He's been playing well.
He has been playing well. He's hitting 320 or something like that. I'd rather pitch to anybody named Mickey in Anaheim. Mouse across the street. Hatcher.
Mickey Hatcher.
The ghost of Mickey Mantle.
What are you doing? Did they not hear what I said yesterday?
I don't.
That they have an opportunity to squelch any hope for the Angels after they gave up 6 in the 9th to the Astros to lose the night before. They're down in the dumps. You can just squelch the Angels' hopes, take them 9 games out of the wild card, and show Ohtani what it's like to play for the Yankees. And I guess the Yankees are showing Ohtani how much they like him by pitching to him. in a crucial situation that everybody knew they should not do, except for the manager, who I like very much, by the way. I saw him, by the way, in New York during the Emmys. He and his wife were having lunch. They had a very nice exchange. If I had told him that, if I had known what was happening then, I would just basically say, hey, man, Aaron, before we go, let's just say you're pitching to Ohtani in about 2 months from now, and the game's on the line. You know, just be careful. Watch your tread lightly.
Boone's getting fired.
Dude, no, they're not. Hal Steinbrenner is catatonic. Catatonic. I don't know what's going on.
Even if they come in last place?
Catatonic. What does he care? Star Insurance is paying him $20 million a year for his team that's in last place now on July 17th. So what does he care? His team's making him money. Do you care, Hal? That's my only question for you is, do you even care? I know Boone does. I'm sure this is killing him. His dad was there last night. His brother was there last night. It's got to be killing him that he is pulling teeth with this team right now as Judge is taking batting practice. But holy cow. There's a four-finger situation for Ohtani, and it's to walk him. Come on. The hell was that? Mickey, I will take my shot with Mickey Moziak and his 324 average. Single and double. He's locked in.
Are you going tonight?
I am so glad. By the way, when I was falling asleep on my couch last night, I was thinking to myself,
glad I'm not there.
Bro, I'm so glad I didn't sit in that bumper-to-bumper traffic to get there for a first pitch at 6:30 when the Angels have their first pitch. The traffic is a disaster.
Herman on the mound tonight.
Great. By the way, on David Cone's perfect game anniversary.
There you go. Back to back.
Cone's perfect. In the booth. So, yeah. I'm glad I didn't go. And I have obligations to the NFL Network tonight.
Oh.
As you know. Sacrifices.
We'll take the chopper down.
Oh, yeah. The network chopper?
Yeah, the network just cruise on down. Yeah.
To the chopper.
I'll make some calls.
Yeah.
I forgot about that network chopper.
It's Moniac.
Would I say Moniac? Moziak?
You were saying Moziak.
Whatever.
Who the hell is Tim Horton?
Moses Moody. Honestly.
Who the hell is Moziak?
My point is the same. I'll pitch to Moziak or Moniac or Zodiac. Mickey Morandini.
It was killer last night.
Mickey Spillane.
Moni Love.
Name a Mickey. I'd pitch to him. Mantle. Oh, maybe not him.
Yeah, you don't want that.
I wouldn't pitch to me. Yeah.
Well, the modern day Ruth is at the plate. What are you doing?
Mickey from Rocky?
How wrestling really works and how you get the ratings. Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson explain on 83 Weeks.
Collision has been struggling a little bit out of the gate with these ticket sales.
A little bit out of the gate. This was a major show announced on a major network with what everybody thought was this huge star, CM Punk. I said he was going to be the biggest financial flop in wrestling history, and I think I'm being proven right every minute of the day.
83 Weeks on YouTube or wherever you listen.